Today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast is sponsored by the Aero Cart by Works. With the Aero Cart 8-in-1 all-purpose carrier from Works, heavy loads are easy to lift and haul. It's like having a wheelbarrow, a trailer mover, and a dolly all in one. Look, not everybody's got a couple of PAX bros that can help them move stuff around whenever they want. That's why the Aero Cart by Works is perfect with two oversized wheels. Even awkward loads stay balanced, so you never have to strain your back. Yeah, two oversized wheels working together just like the PAX bros. That patented TurboLift technology makes lifting 200 pounds feel like you're lifting just 17. There's all sorts of clips on works.com of people lifting heavy bags of topsoil, gravel, even a refrigerator without any help. You'll be a move it all, lift it all, haul it all, know it all when you see the Works Aero Cart in action. Go to aerocart.com, enter promo code RHAP at checkout for free shipping and 10% off. That's aerocart.com, AEROCART.com, and receive free shipping plus 10% off at checkout. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who did not just pee a little bit. I am Rob Cisternino, and welcome back to our Big Brother Canada 4 closeout special. And today, we are going to be going through all of the reactions and everything that's been going on since the show ended last night. And with us all together for the final time in the Big Brother Canada season, Proppa is our live feed team, which I like the nickname the Fax Bros. I don't know if they, I think they don't like it, but that's what we'll go with today. Anyway, so very excited to talk to these guys, and hopefully they're in better spirits, because last night I watched Jordan Parhar talk to these guys, and they were all in different stages of the five stages of grief. I think that if I was going to go down the list, I'd say Taryn. If I had to say for you, I feel like that you were just in like some sort of acceptance last night. You're just like, this is what happens. This is what always happens. It happens all the time. Mitch should have won.
Yeah, my mourning took place over the course of the season.
Yeah. Then Alex Kidwell is with us as well. I'd say he was probably in, I'd say maybe in more in the bargaining stage of like, okay, this is what happened last night, but maybe this is what we can learn from this, and that maybe in the future seasons we'll be able to take from this, that they'll be able to fix this, and moving forward it'll be a better product.
That's right. Yeah, I haven't quite gotten to where Taryn's at yet, where I'm just going to accept this as fact going forward. I don't know if you could tell, I'm flying my Canada flag a little lower than I usually do today. It's at half mast. I got approval from a couple of Canadian citizens to do that, so I feel like that's fair.
Okay. And then Brent is with us as well. Brent Welcome out, who's still maybe in the stages of anger after we ended up with the PAX Bros and Kelsey in the final two with a PAX Bros victory.
Yes, I wasn't sure which stage of grief you were going to put me in, and then when I realized you were talking about the other two, I'm like, oh, I'm definitely the anchor person here. I'm out of the veil though, so that's good. You know, I'm still wearing black, but that may be just because I'm going to work later on. You know?
Okay, all right. Well, here we are to talk about all of it, and I really do want to continue to get the reaction from you guys about all of this that went on in the finale. I want to take your questions here, hashtag RHAP, also on our YouTube channel at robiswebsite.com/YouTube. And of course, we're in the chat room as well here on robiswebsite.com. I actually spoke with all of the final three, including those two PAX Bros. So I guess technically the final four people that were left in the house, had an exit interview with them. They keep those pretty short. I only had about 5 minutes with the PAX Bros. They had a lot of press to do today, and then I got into it with Tim and with Kelsey for about 10 minutes each. You can hear that on robiswebsite.com. We'll probably reference those interviews a bit as we go along here today. Just to give you my take here at the top of the show, I feel like that while I think that I am with the live feed team in that it would have been nice if Tim or Cassandra could have been the winner of this season, I do feel like that we dodged a major bullet and I can live with the Pax Bros winning the season if the alternative was going to be that Kelce was going to win the season. So I think that we need to be at least, you know, you could, you know, there's a story of, you know, at least they won competitions. They weren't great, but at least they, you know, they won competitions. They were fun TV, as opposed to, I don't know what the story is, what the narrative you come away with today if Kelce is your winner, Taryn.
I mean, I think it's a similar narrative. I feel like people, like when the spoilers were coming out, I saw people react to Kelce thinking Kelce was the winner, and then react to thinking the brothers were the winner. And honestly, I think people are a little more disappointed that the brothers were the winners as opposed to Kelce.
I feel like that we still have not had the major reality show where a person who got voted out comes back into the game and wins that. We still haven't had that. That is still virgin territory. We almost had it in the original Big Brother camp, and only by the grace of Topaz did we not have that. You know, we could have had it in Survivor South Pacific, but we have not had that yet happen on any of these shows. And I feel like that, I hope it doesn't happen. I know it will happen one day. I hope it doesn't, but I feel like that had Kelce lost the game, came back and then won, I think that that is the darkest timeline, Brent.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with Taryn to a certain extent. In the light of day, you know, 24 hours later or so, I feel a little bit better about the brothers having won. I think the issue was that a lot of people like me just wanted to see the brothers get their comeuppance. We wanted to see them get it. And we got it a little bit with the jury, but you know, we didn't get it enough. And I don't think we're ever really going to get it. So, you know, at this point, like you said, it's just the stages of grief and it's about acceptance at this point.
What in particular did you want to see them get comeuppance for?
I wanted them to see that they were two total dumbasses when it came to the game.
They will watch the tapes.
I know, but they think they're Derek, and they're anything but Derek. And mm-hmm. The internet just exploded when they started talking about how freaking awesome they were. Again, I will put in a little disclaimer here. I realize that we normally don't get to see house guests' outward emotions this raw, because most people, you know, unless they're like Steve from last year, they're not going to be talking directly to the camera to say how awesome they were. So, you know, this was the rare exception where, you know, you had somebody in the house who has someone they can totally be honest with, know that they're never going to backstab them because they have the same interest at heart. And it was something that none of us had ever sort of seen before. Even with the twins last year, they weren't saying stuff like this on Big Brother 17. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to see them get it. They didn't get it. Instead, they won, which I think none of us saw coming based on the jury video blog. And it was just like, huh? How did that happen?
Now, for me, and again, you guys are way, way, way deeper into this than I am, because you're watching the live feeds and I'm just watching the TV show. And I think that you guys have said on many occasions that the narrative of the TV show is different than what you guys are seeing in the day to day. So that I fully put that out there. So but with that in mind, I feel like that I was impressed with the brothers. Not that they were these great game players, but they did feel like to me they had one fundamental strategy at the beginning of the game. And I felt like they stayed with that in as long as there is a bigger target in the house than us, we will be fine. As long as there is some distraction that people are more worried about something else than us, we'll be okay. Alex, do you feel like they were able to adhere to that philosophy throughout the course of the season?
I feel like that just kind of was something that, you know, like in hindsight, is easy to say was their plan. I don't know that they really went in there wanting to do anything more than just like come off as goofy. But really, did they? Because they're all the time talking about how smart they are. Like, it's easy to say we wanted to be seen as the goofy guys in the DR. But then in their interactions with people, it seems like they want to be seen as masterminds. They want to be seen as smart people in the house. So there is this total disconnect between like what they will say their game was and what it seemed like their game was. And they got really mad and prickly when people would proclaim them to be not good players or do anything that, like, you know, usually it's good to have your game downplayed, but they didn't respond the way you would expect people to respond if that really was their strategy a lot of times in the house. And then, you know, they said, I mean, a lot of it really is just the fundamental lack of understanding of what really happened. Like, did it work out for them? Yes. But does that mean they were aware of why it did or how it did? Absolutely not. Like, I heard you just did their interview and they talked about how they believe their best move was not listening to Mitch, the liar, who was talking about how Jared and Kelsey were wanting to get them out and made a deal to get them out. That deal happened. Like, I understand that they chose not to believe Mitch's truth, and then it still worked out for them that they went with the lie, but they're fundamentally wrong about what the truth was. Like, Jared and Dallas were mortal enemies throughout the first half of this game, and the only conversations they would have would be to come together and talk about how badly they wanted to get the brothers out. So, like, that was the only binding glue of two people that hated each other. Like, you're doing something wrong. And did things work out for them? Yes, but they weren't as active a catalyst in their own success as they would like to believe.
Okay, so I want to unpack this more so than debate it. So are you saying that you feel like that the brothers were on some sort of Forrest Gump type journey throughout the house, like a feather that just happened to blow in the right direction every single time that the wind came up? I mean, not only that did they win so much, they also stayed off of the block for almost the entire game, save for one time, and they were able to get off with the veto. I mean, so how did they end up in this spot?
Yeah, I mean, down the stretch, exactly. They won when they needed to win. And, you know, in the end game, that's what they needed to do this time around. In this season, you know, winning these competitions, being with Kelsey, who was the best studier in the house, like, that was the path to the end game, and it worked. But, yeah, like, a lot of it is... You know, and it's funny because they were the ones throwing around the term floater more than anyone else this entire season. But they are the Rachel Riley definition of floater.
Don't be a floater. Be a Pax Brother voter.
Well, I guess they're one and the same, Rob, because, you know, the Andy Herron June Song style floater is not actively steering the ship, but is aware of where the ship is going at all times. And that was not the Pax Brothers this season. They were often just, you know, letting the ship go where it went and benefiting from the end destination. And that's not the same thing. They played fine, and certainly they weren't targeted early on. But, you know, people say, like, what a great, you know, yeah, they were, you know, they came in as a duo week one, and what a big target to have all the way through. But again, like, when the whole house is sat down in week three and told these guys are never going to break up, like, production is subconsciously telling you they're not a threat. You know what I mean? Think about, like, the wording of how it's used, the presentation of, like, don't worry, guys. This is not a thing to worry about. That subconsciously tells you not to worry about the brothers. Like, that had to have helped them on some level.
Yeah. Now, Taryn, what do you think of this idea? Because of that, they always wanted to keep a bigger story going on in the house. And this isn't something that they said last night or in their jury argument, but this was something even from the beginning of the season that was talked about when the wild cards came in, when each new thing happened, you know, Kelsey came back into the house, that there was always a bigger story going on between the battle between the third wheel and the Dallas side of the house. Did they consciously try to benefit from those things?
Okay, so here's what I think happened. They definitely had that strategy in the beginning. That was their reasoning for keeping Kelsey over Paige. And moving forward in the game, them staying in the middle, that was the idea. And it seemed like they might be playing well in the beginning of the game. At some point, somewhere after Mitch leaves, they kind of like lose the plot. And what they're saying now about like them not lying, that's what they said Tim was doing. They said Tim was telling truths that could be manipulated into thinking people were lying, so like so on and so forth. I think that Mitch was guiding them in the middle. I think that they had that idea about keeping bigger targets from Mitch, and I think that Mitch was helping guide that middle. And as soon as Mitch left, they completely lost the plot. They didn't talk about keeping targets in after the buyback. They were just all in on Jared and Kelsey, and they were just going to stay loyal to them no matter what. Even if it cost them the game, really. So I really think that they kind of latched on to bigger players in the game. You know, after Mitch left, it was Tim. And then when Tim left, it was Jared, and then back to Tim when Jared left. So I think that they kind of take their strategy from somebody else and kind of repeat it as their own, as though that was their strategy all along.
To me, with the story of the brothers, I really just go back to that contest where you had to make the memes in the house. And the winning meme that Tim made was like, you know, two brains, but, you know, like, or I forget exactly what it was. But the punchline is, here are these two guys. There's not one brain between them. Two half-wits or whatever it was. And they said at that time, like, okay, you could think we're dumb, but, and it doesn't mean that they're not dumb. And again, I enjoyed them on the show, but I keep coming back to this Stephen Fishback quote from this season. Isn't the greatest strength the perceived weakness? Brent, do you feel like that they were able to sufficiently benefit from this idea, hey, these guys are two dinguses?
I mean, certainly, you know, what I was trying to say on the podcast last night was, I think the jury saw them as dinguses, but they were their dinguses. You know, they were at least able to empathize with them, where at least they could not do that with Kelsey. I agree with Alex to a certain extent, though, that it did feel like, well, what target were they trying to avoid? When production, in its infinite wisdom, and I have never seen this before, where they literally sat them down and said, you know, we heard some rumors in the house, and we just want to tell you guys that the brothers will never be split up. I mean, they're essentially telling you they are one person. Do not worry about them. So that always irritates me. I will say this too, Rob, though.
Yes.
The thing that irritates me even more about the brothers than they wanting to be masterminds is their apparent unwillingness to admit that they lied. Mm-hmm. And that, coming down the stretch, was more than anything the thing I wanted to hear them say. And, you know, Nick bailed out Phil on Cassandra's question last night. But even in their interviews today, I read something in the National Post that when Phil was giving an answer about the same thing I talked to you about the argument in the pink room at the dinner and then at the dinner table when they were talking with Cassandra and they denied that they lied. And Phil is saying, well, she stretched the truth and I stretched the truth. Well, that's a lie. Just say it. Why can't you say you lied? It's like they just won't say it at this point. It irritates the living hell out of us.
I do think, though, that there is something about Big Brother as opposed to Survivor, where you do these Survivor exit interviews with people. And on Survivor, you go out, you go play the show for 39 days, you come home, then several months later, a year later, if you're the people on this season, then you watch the show and you see... Well, you watch the tape of the show and then you do an exit interview, you do press, and then you can talk about something informed. It's like, oh, yeah, that moment on the show. Yeah, that I was lying to that person. With these exit interviews that we do and these jury speeches, you know, these people just live their lives for 3 months. And I don't know if they remember every single conversation where it's like if it turned out that my house was a TV show and somebody comes and like calls me out on a conversation I had with my wife a month ago and says, no, Rob, you were totally lying about it. I'm like, no, I was. I don't know. And it's possible that without the benefit of seeing these things, like I always go back to in Big Brother 15, where Julie Chen called out Aaron about things that she said. And she was like, I have no idea what you're, you know, she didn't remember anything that happened. And we remember it. We've seen the tape and we've seen the footage. So I do think it's hard for these people to remember things that they've done. And in their head, the story changes. So I don't think that necessarily they're always lying to us. I think sometimes they're just not remembering things right. And I think that once they see the tapes, then they'll say, oh, yeah, you're right. I think I totally was doing that. So it's tough with these day after Big Brother press interviews.
You just want people to come to the finale and say, yes, I was manipulating you. I lied to you in this conversation. I had to do that in order to get to the end or to make this move. That's what we want to hear. You know, we need to talk about the fact that this was probably one of the worst final two performances of a pair of contestants I have ever seen in my life.
It was quite bad. It was quite bad. And I actually thought that Kelsey was winning. I really was like, watch the whole show. I was really, again, I know you guys were all so upset. I was relieved when the brothers won because I really thought Kelsey had it.
Well, I was watching it from the context of I already knew what the spoilers were. So when I was watching the show, I didn't have to worry about that. I mean, the spoilers came across Twitter around 5 p.m. or so.
Yeah.
So we knew the brothers won. So I was looking at it. In hindsight, I wish I hadn't have because I was looking at it through the lens of, oh, how did Kelsey blow this? When going into it, we thought that the brothers had the edge, or we thought that Kelsey had the edge, rather.
Yeah. Taryn, when you were watching the show, were you also spoiled?
Yeah.
Alex, same for you? Okay.
Yeah. It was too hard to avoid on Twitter.
I do want to say though, about the brothers claiming they weren't lying. I want to reiterate that like they had a conversation with Tim earlier in the game where Tim was saying, I don't lie in this game. I don't manipulate. And they said to Tim, no, what you do is you choose your words carefully and they can be interpreted in ways. And you know that it can be interpreted in ways. And that's exactly how they described their game. I think that they genuinely took that to heart and they thought that that's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I hope people aren't getting it twisted that I don't think that the brothers, either the brothers separate or as a cohesive unit, were any sort of, you know, top Big Brother player of all time. But I just feel like that this, you know, this outcome, it was not what we wanted, but it was definitely not the darkest timeline of a person who got voted out of the game coming back and ultimately winning this thing. In terms of the people who are not the, you know, the live feed watchers, a lot of the people that we interact with, Alex, any word on what's the casual reaction to the Pax brothers winning?
I think it's interesting. It's mixed. I mean, I definitely think a lot of people are down on them winning, but certainly, you know, the bulk of the people that I get feedback from are feeds watchers. So in my bubble, it's very negative, but I do believe that they have their fans. I mean, certainly if you just watched the live show, I could see why certainly next to Kelsey, they would be seen as the preferable option. You know, like, we really saw Kelsey as probably the winner between the two of them, not only because, you know, she was part of the third wheel. She's part of this big threat. You know, Mitch had talked about, I'm going to vote for a member of the third wheel at the end if they're there. Really on the feeds, like, did the brothers win the competitions to keep them in power? Yes. But did they do what Kelsey demanded of them every single time with that power? Yes. Kelsey was the decision maker down the stretch for that little threesome. And so that's why we really thought, like, you know, those scenes where Kelsey's stroking Phil's head and Phil's just like, I mean, taking grapes out, like whatever Kelsey wanted, they were doing. So for us watching that down the stretch, it was hard to see the brothers as the alpha of that relationship. It looked like Kelsey was the one kind of controlling the action, and that if Kelsey could have explained that correctly, that she would have won.
Do you guys feel like that I am giving Kelsey the short shrift?
Well, I think she did improve down the stretch. I mean, I definitely think her game was better late, and that, you know, even if she doesn't necessarily know how to articulate what she was doing, she was the brothers. Like every time Cass or Tim would come to them or Joel would come to them and say, like, could I get you to switch up the vote when the vote wasn't going their way that week? They would say, well, you got to talk to Kelsey. It always came back to we're doing what Kelsey wants to do. And I don't think that was a lie. I think they legitimately wanted to stay true to Kelsey all the way down the stretch, and Kelsey was the one calling the shots. So to me, that was, you know, like when I was watching that and, you know, when I was seeing people go out like Cass, I'm like, surely Cass thinks she went out at Kelsey's hand. But then Cass seemed irritated with Kelsey for not doing what she saw as Kelsey's best decision and keeping someone who would have taken her to final two. So it just comes down to, it's hard to predict these jury members ultimately until you hear from them.
Taryn, but do you see that as bowing to the will of Kelsey, or that it was clear that, you know, Joel and Cassandra and Tim were working together? They were on the side with Kelsey and Jared, and that's the only other person who's working with them in the house that they don't think is going to screw them over.
I mean, the brothers definitely took their orders from Kelsey. I mean, that was definitely a thing that was happening. Like, and for instance, keeping Joel in the game would have greatly benefited the brothers over Cass. And they knew it, and they still just did what Kelsey told them to do. They resisted a little bit, and then were just like, no, fine, we'll do it your way. And I mean, really, for Kelsey, I mean, the criteria is she studied properly and she didn't try to evict herself from the game. And it's like, at least when she tried to evict herself from the game, it was earlier in the game.
She was already out
in the game.
Yeah. So. It's like clearing the high bar when it's set at 1 foot, Rob.
Yeah. All right. So do you feel that the story of last night should be that Kelsey blew it with her performance in front of the jury, Taryn?
You know, I think that's definitely part of it. Like, you see Mitch ask the question to Kelsey, and it seems like a layup, and you see the disappointment in his face with her answer. I think another part of it, and I'm not entirely sure, but I feel like another part of it might have been that Cass came and gave them some information that changed their minds and kind of campaigned against Kelsey after the interviews that we had seen with the jury where they said they were not willing to vote for the brothers under any circumstances. So I think the combination of Cass and Kelsey's jury performance just, you know, pushed it all toward the brothers.
That'd be an interesting question to get from this jury, because I always feel like, especially with these Big Brother juries, that they kind of come in, they know what the thing is, they're not making a quick change, and it'll be interesting to find out how many votes actually were changed in that moment, if Kelsey was able to change some minds. I mean, in talking to her this morning, I do still feel like that she didn't know what people want to hear. And I do think that would be such a big deal to these people that are recruits, and they come in and I feel like that they sort of like watch a season or two, like, oh, okay, I get this show. But I feel like that's the thing that they never quite get, is what the jury wants to hear at the end of the show. It seems like that's just like the one piece of information that never gets filtered down to them, Alex.
Well, in a perfect world, they watch at least one season all the way through to the end. Yes. But we know for a fact that Kelsey didn't do that in Sequester. She just watched a few episodes. So she didn't learn anything about jury management or, you know, final speeches. And, you know, I think we got a demonstration of that.
Yeah. Okay. Then in terms of putting aside the brothers and Kelsey, just to go back to the Threek show, Brent, do you feel like is the real story of the season that they just fumbled down the stretch here?
Oh, yeah, literally, like the ball's at the 1 yard line and they can't get it into the end zone, Rob. Seriously, how in the world?
This is like the Russell Wilson interception of Big Brother.
Yes. How did this happen? How did this happen? I was already planning for my Joel, Cass, Tim final three. I was like, you know, how great is that going to be? Because I'm cool with all three of them being the winners, you know, and look where we're headed to. You know, they totally double cross the brothers in the double eviction. The brothers can't play for HOH next week, no matter what production does. And then Kelsey's the only one they got to beat. And then lo and behold, Kelsey beats all of them for HOH. And then the following week, the brothers beat them all for HOH. It just was like, and then they have a veto competition where they can work together and they can't get it together. Mm-hmm. Just like the twins last year, they cannot get it together where they can rig it, literally themselves rig it, where they can get the one person who's not on the block to win the veto. That way they're all three safe and they can get out the one person who they know that they want to all three get out. It was just like, it was absolutely infuriating to watch. It was like a train wreck in slow motion because I literally had to watch it. And that's where, if you hear my irritation in my voice over the last 2 weeks, that's where it's coming from, because I was all prepped for a fabulous win for Cass at the end. And it just was like, where did that go? I had
just
that.
It all came down to comps.
Yeah, well, let's talk about what ultimately happened with Cassandra and her not ultimately being able to win something. Tara, do you think that was a result of Tim rubbing off on her?
You know, it's hard to say, because it seems like she was a fan of the show. She knew what these competitions were. And she even says in one of her DRs, like, she knows that she needs to study. And yet she did not. And Kelsey, who was a recruit, who did not know, who shouldn't have known, at least next to Cassandra, that she needed to study, studied like crazy and just nailed those questions. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, it's hard to know. I think part of it must have been Tim, because Tim was definitely very adamant about not studying. He wanted to just wing it as it came. But still, like, you have to figure, like, there's something there that just, like, she didn't feel like she needed to study.
It did seem to me a big turning point was at that final four HOH, where, and Brent and Taryn, I heard you guys talking about this with Jordan this past Sunday night, where the brothers talked to Cassandra and she promised she was going to throw it. And it seemed like, you know, it was the same exact thing that she was duping them. I promise I'm not going to use the veto. I'm going to throw this HOH. And then she starts answering questions. And then She stops answering these questions, and you guys were debating whether or not she did it because she didn't know the answers or she was trying to make good with them. But that seems like a big turning point to me, considering that she's going to go end up being eliminated, which we did not know, I think, at that time when we were having this conversation on Sunday. Alex, how big was that for you?
Yeah, it's big. And that's, you know, it's one reason I wish they had given you a Cassandra interview, Rob. It's one Joe Anglim unrelated, non-Joe Anglim related reason that I really wish you'd gotten to speak with Cassandra, because it would be very telling. Yeah. And it's, you know, it is like there were a couple of moments down the stretch here where, yeah, I mean, because that one is huge. The Tim giving up seemingly is big. And there are these just kind of like fuzzy, like scene missing type moments in the, like at the end of the movie where you're just like, wait, it's like, you know, Superman's attacking, scene missing, death of Superman. You're like, well, how did we get there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As Zack Snyder, right?
Yeah.
Right. Taryn, what about that for you in terms of Cassandra and her legacy?
Yeah, I mean, I was always the one kind of tempering the response to her gameplay because I saw a lot of flaws throughout the game. And I think we saw that, you know, despite Joel falling on his sword, kind of, she just kind of goes out kind of unceremoniously the next week. I do think it's a huge mistake to throw that competition at Final Four if she threw it. If not, it's still a mistake to not have studied and not know those answers to save yourself when you put yourself in a situation where you need to win the comp to stay safe. So I do think she's a good player. She has the right instincts to play the game. She knows the things she has to do, but she doesn't always follow through. And she gets very, she wants to get the last word in. She makes these little mistakes here and there. And I think that's ultimately where she lies as far as a player.
Brent, I don't even understand the logic of what's the benefit of throwing the Final Four HOH?
None whatsoever, because if you win it, they can't get you out. And they've already told her, all three of them have told her at this point, they made a Final Three treaty. She knows she's going to be out if she doesn't win the veto. She said, you know, I'll throw the HOH. I'll owe you my life in this game. But if you win it, you're safe. And if you lose it, you're in the exact same position you were in before, which is they're going to get rid of you unless you win the veto. So why in the world would you throw the HOH? I have to believe you. I have to believe, Rob, that she's trying to save face, just like Tim was in that terrible interview he did with the
Well, let's talk about Tim. I got to speak with Tim this morning, and I really wanted to, like, Tim, what are you doing? You said that you played so hard all season, and it was so much fun to watch you, and you had this way with manipulating people. You obviously wanted to win. What do you mean you didn't want to win at this point? He's like, oh, no. And I said that, and if you were going to give up, Brent, if you were going to give up, why didn't you give up when Cassandra said, Tim, I'm begging you, please fall on your sword for me. Tell them that you want out. Maybe they'll keep me. Or he could have even used his veto on her at the final five. When Joel ended up going out, and he did neither of those things. And he said, well, that's the competitive part of me. I just wanted to show that I was better than Cass. I wanted to beat Cass, Brent.
I need to leave. Seriously. That's absolutely pathetic. Is that really what he said? Because I haven't listened to these interviews.
Tell me.
I'm literally going to lose my mind.
Alex, like, am I making this up?
I was the one who put in that question for you to ask him. I can't even believe that that's really his answer. Are you trolling me? Is that really what he said?
That's what he said.
That? There was definitely a piece of him that wanted, oh, I know that's terrible. I shouldn't say it.
Tim,
really,
go to hell. That's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. You know, Rob, I'm going to go to work. I'm done with this. I can't believe it. How in the world did this happen where he's just, I want to be better than Cassandra? Then win the game. Show them that you can win the game and you're better than Cassandra.
Well, he just wanted to be Cassandra and then let the brothers have the dream of winning Big Brother.
I'm losing my mind, and I guarantee you, the internet, the Twitter, they'll all lose their mind once they hear that. In fact, I'm okay for people out there who think I'm going crazy. I'm okay with the brothers winning. Fine, whatever. I don't care. But again, I wanted Cass to win. She was great television. I wanted Tim to win. I really liked him in the DRs. I love the way he played the game. Even Joel, I could have accepted. So for it to collapse down the end, again, I felt like, like you said, the Seahawks at the 1 yard line and the Patriots intercept it. I remember that. It's the exact same feeling. Exact same feeling where I'm like, no, how did this happen? No. But, you know, whatever. So anyway, I wasn't lying though. I do have to go to work.
I know.
But it's been a pleasure, you guys. I'll see y'all.
Don't get it twisted. Brent is not storming off the show.
Yes, I'm not storming
I really
off.
Wanted that to happen, but
yeah, I know. I was gonna do that, but then I thought that people wouldn't understand. Yeah, so I'm not really mad. Yeah. I'm not really mad, but I am. If that's Tim's answer, Boy, he better hope I don't see him on Twitter, I'll tell you. All right.
Okay. Later. All right. All right. So then in terms of Tim and Cassandra, just following up with this, and we haven't gotten a Cassandra reaction yet from this on social media, but this is an email I got in from one of our listeners that I want to touch on. This is from one of our listeners, Christine, who writes in to say, hey, can you guys discuss how pissed off with Tim Cass was in the finale? You guys are always good at noticing body language, so I'm sure you picked up on it as well. I interpreted it as being angry that he gave up when he was going to do that. He should have given it up to her for a chance to play on. Not sure if Kelsey and the brothers would have agreed, but I think that she was pissed that he didn't try. Alex, did you notice any sort of negative body language coming from Cass towards Tim last night?
It's hard to place it exactly because Cass's negative body language was everywhere last night. I mean, eye rolls, stabbing gestures when Kelsey was talking. There was a lot going on to catch if you were looking. But yeah, I definitely think she was a little bit unhappy with that whole situation. I don't know if she knows the full extent, you know, but if she does, I can't imagine she's thrilled. And once she does, Tim was saying like, well, yeah, maybe I'll stay in Canada. You know I at least have one friend to come visit. And like, do you? I don't know. Like, will she really want to have you over after she learns all of this? I don't think she'll be super excited with it. But at the same time, like, Tim is not obligated to give up his spot at any point in the game. It's frustrating that he did it at 3, but he doesn't mean he should have done it at 4.
Yeah. Taryn, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's just Tim, he's been doing this all season where he's giving us a different narrative in the DR than what's actually happening on the show. And it's just it's gotten more obvious since he's come out of the house because they're not editing his DRs anymore. I think that he threw a tantrum at that competition and he just rage quit. And that like that was the story. And he's trying to sell us something different. But like, we know better.
Mm hmm. Let me touch on something that I see in the chat room, which I think is pretty ridiculous. I won't give the name if you don't want me to. But there's a thing, and I've seen this a couple times on social media, which I think is pretty ridiculous. That Tim and Nikki got an appearance fee to be on the show, which may or may not be true. And because of that, for some reason, they were not contractually allowed to win the show. And so that Tim needed to perform some sort of ritual suicide in his game here at the final three because of that contractual provision that he was not allowed to win the show because he accepted an appearance fee. Alex, does that sound like anything that could be possible?
The fix is in, Rob. The fix is in, I tells you. It's mayhem. It's pandemonium. They're going crazy at the garden. I don't know. I don't think so at all. I definitely think they got an appearance.
I'm like a storyteller. That's what I do.
Yeah. Fan fiction, as Penner says, malarkey, as Michelle says.
I mean, that's not crazy to think that, okay, that these people that are, you know, sort of international, like that they probably got paid some appearance fee to be on the show. That part certainly makes sense. But the idea that they wouldn't be able to win or they had to go out at some point. And if that is the case, then why wouldn't he give it up to his friend? If he knew he has to leave the game for some reason anyway, at before the final two, then why not give up to Cass when she's begging him, please give up for me. This is my dream. You're ruining my dream. He's like, no, I really want this. I really want the brothers to win.
Yeah, his friend and fan favorite, not to mention the fact that, right, I mean, just, yeah. No,
yeah.
There's a lot of issues there. Although, you know, I think the conspiracy theory is perpetuated a bit by, you know, the fact that Tim throughout the season was saying things like, well, you know, I'm a wild card. You know, that's why I'm here to be. Like, I don't know if I really want to win. Do I want to win? Like, you know, so he was saying that stuff and that doesn't help the case.
Yeah. But what I would say about Tim is, and I think that Tim is a very smart guy and I think he's a very calculated guy. And I think that he has an air about him. I think that one of the reasons why he's so popular is because of this, like, oh, what's he going to do next? Well, he's a crazy man. What's he going to do? He's so unpredictable. And I think that, and you have like, Will Kirby had this a bit about him too also. It's like, if the story becomes he cares so much and he doesn't get it, then he loses some of that power. And I think that he has to have this air about him, like, I don't care about anything. I'm just here for the fun. I'm just here for it. And so if he starts to be like, I want this more than anything, and then he doesn't get it, what does he have, Taryn?
He has nothing. I think that's completely spot on. Down to the Dr. Will comparison. I watched this guy on the feeds all season. He's not that good of an actor that he could have, like, fooled all of us into thinking that he wasn't paid to just be a shill on the show. And also, he spilled tons of like reality show secrets on the feeds to the house guests and to us. Like, you really think that the producers of Big Brother Canada are going to trust this guy to not like say anything about paying him to throw the game? Like, that's huge scandal material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of oops, I probably shouldn't say that. Feeds.
Yeah. And I really liked him, and I thought that, you know, I talked to him today, and even though I was mad at him, I do think that he has an infectious quality about him, and he's a very fun guy to talk to. I hope that at some point we get the chance to talk to him more about this, but I don't think that there was any sort of like treacherous plot and stuff like that. I think that a lot of times that, you know, these big conspiracy theories, especially when they pertain to reality TV, it's just trying to, you know, wish fulfillment of what, you know, why didn't our favorites win?
Yeah.
So let's get into some of these questions that we have from the listeners, because I know we got a good crowd today. People watching the show live. Scott St. Pierre is behind the scenes pulling these questions, and let's get to as many as we can. We have some time before we get into the Amazing Race finale coming later on tonight. Shannon Kish wants to know, what was going on between the Tim and Cassandra fight last night? I think he may like her, but she's still upset. He wasn't her knight in shining armor in the game. If he was going to fall on his sword, shouldn't he have done it at least to save his queen? Anything else from Tim and Cassandra? That is there anything else there that you want to touch on?
Taryn?
What about Tim saying the other night too, when in his lie to Canada, that he talked about how, I lied that there was some sort of romantic chemistry between Cass and I. There really wasn't ever. We were always just friends, but I did that to throw people off the scent. Actual factual or actual craptual?
I think it's similar to what you were talking about, where like he's not going to tell us he wants Cass if Cass isn't guaranteed to say yes to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a part of him that's definitely into Cass, but you know, he's not going to be like, oh yeah, I'm totally into Cass, and then have her in the diary room saying, yeah, I'm playing Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He strikes me as someone that might be interested in Cass as a friend or maybe more, but he also strikes me as someone who's like, well, I don't really like believe in that like monogamy thing also. That's more English than Australian.
Yeah, I don't think he's like in love with Cass, but you know, I think there's a little something there. You know, you've seen him on the feeds.
Yeah,
he strikes me as more of a free love type of individual. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Tim thing is like, I really, you know, he'll never say he really wants that thing, because if he doesn't get it, then he could say like, oh, I never even really wanted it in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with Cass as it was about the game. If Cass would have, you know, been like, Tim, I'm madly in love with you, sure. But if she was just like in the friend zone, he's like, oh, that's what I wanted all the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Always a get out of jail free card.
Scott Wrigley says, for the second time this season, the Canadian voters did not get what they wanted. I firmly believe that Canada wanted both a Nikki HOH reign and Tim as the winner. Discuss. Do we believe that Tim would have been the presumptive favorite in the fan voting for Canada's vote here, Taryn?
I do believe it. You know, the only thing that calls that into doubt is the fact that the brothers got the vote in the HOH week over Tim. But we have to assume that Nikki ate up a lot of the Tim votes. And certainly by the end of the season, I think the brothers had lost some steam with the fans and Tim had picked some up. So especially with the Tim and Cass relationship, I really think that Tim probably got the majority of the votes. And given all the fan voting sites I've seen, that seems to be the representative thought.
Okay, let's take this question from DSCox721. How did this season become so underrated? So many votes got flipped during the week, producing minimal unanimous votes, big personalities, lots of fireworks, the double evictions delivered. Get with it, guys. Alex, I know you guys were ranking the seasons quite a bit. You guys both, I believe, had the same season rankings, which I believe were 2, 1, 4, 3. As we've gotten now 24 hours away from the finale, any thoughts on bumping that up, or it's not going to get past the season one threshold?
I think for me it doesn't, just because, you know, even if moves were made that were like kind of shock and awe moments, I mean, for me, there just wasn't a lot there to grasp in terms of, you know, nuance and strategy. Like, I really appreciate when I can kind of get, you know, something new or somebody to like deviate from standard strategy. And there just wasn't enough game knowledge for people to not just be doing a lot of the same things we've seen before. I mean, really only things we've seen before. Most of the moves made this season were made for personal reasons or petty reasons, regardless of the justification given at the time. And that's a little bit, you know, of a setback to me in terms of like where this game is evolving strategically. But so for me, that's why, you know, like you had some thinkers on season one that were trying to, you know, navigate their way through a new game. So to me, that was more, there was more for me to latch onto there. So this still falls under one for me.
Now, Taryn, you and Alex always preach about not being results biased in terms of how things play out. Had Cass or Tim won the season, don't you feel like that people would potentially be calling this the best season there ever was?
Oh, 100%. I wouldn't have been one of those people. Which almost makes me glad the brothers won, because now I'm with the majority again. But yeah, I think if Cass or Tim had won, people would be ecstatic about the whole season.
Yeah. So that we should not let the outcome move the needle that much, right?
Well, no, because I think genuinely, I think that they would be ecstatic about the season right now, but history would remember the season a bit more poorly than the immediate reaction would have borne out.
Yeah.
The Sopranos is a great show with a horrible ending, Rob. It doesn't mean you can judge the two things separately. You know what I mean? Like, an ending can be fantastic, and it doesn't mean like the finished product was exactly what, you know, was great. You know what I mean? Like, each bit can be judged separately, but right, the end result is not the be-all end-all.
Yeah.
I love the Sopranos ending.
You know what else is really wild to me is that Ramsay in the house was almost a complete non-entity. I know Taryn is a big Ramsay defender, but really had, you know, almost nothing going on in the house. And then, you know, leaves under, you know, dire circumstances, comes out, and a huge, like, a standing room ovation for Ramsay here. Becomes a bigger fan favorite than he ever possibly could have been in the house. And it seems like everything is good with his dad. What a reversal of fortune, Alex.
Yeah, no, it is interesting, right? I mean, it definitely, you know, he benefits from being the first person to have to leave their game this way. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So that makes him iconic in a way. That makes him synonymous with a thing. You know what I mean? And
to
like
the point where now I almost feel like that hold a spot for him on All-Stars.
Yeah, yeah. If you subscribe to the Caleb Reynolds school of thought, Ramsay definitely deserves a slot.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a possibility. Also, this is something else I want to touch on. This is from Evs Pearl in the chat room. Tim looked orange last night. Too much fake tan. I noticed that as well. Tara, what's going on there?
That's been happening all season. I think there was one point where they talked about like how they wanted to stop putting it on, but production wanted them to have the fake tan on.
Okay, so throw production under the bus on that one. I don't know.
It's like when we heard Zach say something when he came out of the DR. He's like, they won't let me put a shirt on.
Yeah.
They just want me to be shirtless forever.
Okay. I'm drunker than Moses. Okay. This could be get the troll patrol ready. Are the brothers the best winners the show ever had? Sarah had twist after twist helping her. John was helped by the HOH twist. And Jillian was lucky Topaz was an idiot. While the brothers never really had that much help. How about that, Tarrant?
I mean, the brothers were definitely helped by the buyback, and they were helped by the Canada votes for HOH Twist. So, I mean, at the very least, as much as John. So even if you're subscribing to that theory, I don't think it holds any water.
Just to play devil's advocate here, Alex, okay? So, I mean, really, what is the difference between the brothers who had two people working together who they could trust implicitly, and a showman such as like a Jillian and Emmett, who they knew were never going to, but they have two votes. They control two votes, whereas the brothers have two people working together. They only control one vote. Isn't that advantage Jillian and Emmett? And they have two shots at winning every single competition.
I mean, from what standpoint? Like, what are you talking about? Like, quality of...
Aren't the brothers better than Jillian and Emmett?
No. Well, according, Peter Brown does some advanced level sabermetrics on these things, Rob. I don't know if you've caught his Twitter today.
Let's talk about that. I did catch that.
His analytics, they are the best player in Big Brother Canada history.
The brothers are the best player in Big Brother Canada history, or Jillian and Emmett?
No, the brothers are the best player.
I'm teasing a little bit. I don't think that the brothers are better than Jillian and Emmett, but I do think that there is something to that in that, okay, yeah, the brothers were two people, but... and they could trust each other 100%, but some of these showmances where they could trust each other 100%, you're controlling still two votes, and then also have two shots in these competitions where the brothers from week to week only had one shot in these competitions. But okay, so let's talk about what's going on with what Peter Brown is up to. So Peter Brown had tweeted, of course, Big Brother Canada won. Standout and one of the co-hosts of the Big Brother Sideshow, he had tweeted out some statistics that he had been putting together, which he calls his Big Brother Canada 4 analytics that he put together. Now, Taryn, is there any sort of a key to determining where Peter Brown gets these numbers from? As Ian Terry might say, show your work.
Yeah, he posted his big list of criteria that go into the equation. And it's basically just a list of like everything in the game, including like number of days you're a have not or something. Mm-hmm. I'm reasonably certain that he doesn't actually believe this, and like he's just trolling us. I'm pretty sure that's what's going on.
All right, Alex, is Peter
like way too much work for trolling though?
Yes, well, I'll give you the stats and then we can discuss this. Peter Brown, so he has that and I guess this is like a golf where you want to have the lowest possible number. Pax brothers had a 1.24 ranking, and the second best player by those criteria was Jared with a 2.64. And Ramsey, surprisingly, as a 2.74 BB can analytic number, Maddie at a 2.78 and Kelsey at a 2.81. So clearly, far and away, the best player was the Pax brother. And Taryn, I'm very sorry to report, Mitch is all the way down at 13 with a 3.95, below the likes of Dallas, Levita, and Raul.
Yeah, below Raul, easily the worst player of the season.
Now, how did Ramsey end up in the top three of players for the season?
He never got voted out. Maybe,
I like, guess
maybe,
so. Yeah. I guess no votes cast against him.
Both cats get cast against you as a statistic.
Yes. Now, is this possible, Alex? Is this all part of a viral marketing ploy for Peter Brown to take the open chair left by Skip Bayless on First Take? Is that possible, Alex?
I don't know about that, but I do hope that this convinces them to give him some kind of like sports science segment on the Sideshow next year.
I think
because
so.
I would actually watch that. I think that would be fun.
Okay, and then the all-time top 10 best players in the history of Big Brother Canada, according to Peter Brown's advanced analytics. 10, Jared Kessler, which Jared, I think, would was, well, obviously, that I would be in the top 10 of any formula, because if I just didn't have to cut my hair, I would win the show. Number 9, Gary Levy. Number 8, Big Brother 1 standout, Andrew Monahan. Blast from the past. I can't remember the last time we talked about him. Ashley Wood, a tie at fifth place for Sarah Hanlon and Netta. Number 4, Jillian. Number 3, Emmett. Number 2, John Party. And number 2, number 1, the Pax Bros. So that the Pax Bros, by the formula, are not just the best player in Big Brother 4, the greatest player in Big Brother Canada history.
Yeah, I think that he might be missing one key element to the formula, which is how many times the person tried to evict themselves from the game.
Yeah.
That might influence things a little bit.
Wow. Peter Brown is like the Paul De Podesta of the what's going on with Big Brother Canada. Now, has Peter Brown released the Big Brother US rankings yet?
No, he said they're coming soon, though.
Okay, well, I'd love to get him on the podcast and we could do a whole podcast out of the Big Brother US release party.
Especially because I have to think that based on this formula, like Dr. Will isn't cracking the top 50. So
no.
That'll be interesting.
No. My sources tell me, the number one, Big Brother US player of all time, was actually Joey.
I thought you were going to say Brittany Haynes, but yeah, that works too.
Joey, actually, the Team America had a lot going on. She had multiple personalities. So I think that was actually,
It's similar to the brothers where she had two different people that she could play with.
Right. No, Peter is, I have the utmost respect for what he's able to do. Because who else would even think of this, like coming out with this list the day after the finale? This is incredible. And I tip my cap to this.
Yeah, this is some next level stuff. It is fun to talk about, if nothing else.
Yes, next level stuff that he has hijacked the news cycle here on the day after the Big Brother Canada 4 finale. And if you want to see all the details of this, you can see it on Peter's Twitter. Also, Peter Brown. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. All right, so let's get back to some of these questions today. Then we have from Moose Girl, 1996. When will Big Brother players learn that we want them to own their game? Admit you lied and play dirty. We watch you for months. You're not fooling anyone, Kelsey and Phil. This is an interesting question to me, Taryn. Do you feel like that the ultimate audience for this sort of thing is that the live TV audience that's sitting in front of these people, or is it the jury? Do you feel like that if there was no audience, if we could almost make people forget about that this is a TV show, do you feel like that people would be more okay, here's what I did? Are people afraid of being booed at that live finale of like, okay, I lied, and people are like, yes, you know, is that part of the problem, the studio audience, or do you think it's just that they are delusional?
Oh, absolutely. I think part of it is that they're delusional and that they're recruits. They don't know the game. They don't realize that owning their game might, you know, net them supporters in the audience. And then also part of it is that, especially with Big Brother Canada, they have to be terrified of the audience. They have to be terrified of being seen as the villain, because just on the off chance that one of these twists is an audience vote, they might get screwed by it if they're not careful about appealing to this audience. So they have to be very, very careful and cautious about what they reveal.
And that's why the stat science stuff is a bit funny, because let's be honest, like, how do you quantify audience influence? How can we apply science to a game where we don't even know if you're allowed to nominate yourself for HOH or not? We don't know the rules of this game. So how could we possibly begin to apply sabermetrics to it when we don't know the rules?
Yeah. Peter, does Peter place in his own top 10? No, right?
I think he used to, but I think now there are gave him a lot of crap for that, so he's added a lot more categories now, and he's no longer present in that.
Yeah, I really do want to do a deep dive into this later on when I'm off the air and really really explore this, because I feel like that we could, if I could get Peter to get into this for Survivor, I mean, this is like a new audio book ready to go.
Andy Johns.
It's juicy. Yeah. It's juicy stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, podcasts write themselves. Okay. Preseason preview. Who does Peter have in what spot? Okay. Let's keep going. Let's go to, this is a good question from Gremlin Stump. Has anyone noticed how unhappy Kelsey is with Cass? In exit interviews today, she referred to her as someone I thought was my friend and has talked about how disappointed she was that Cass didn't vote for her. Alex, have you picked up on any of that? Is Kelsey really pissed with Cass?
I mean, she seemed a little disappointed in your exit interview. I don't know if she seemed pissed. I think she didn't see that coming. So I think that caught her by surprise a little bit, but she, I'll stop short of saying she should have seen that coming, but she didn't make the best move for her game, I believe, by taking out someone who would have taken her to Final Two when Tim wouldn't have. So, you know, if you're going to make an illogical move and send somebody out of the house that way, it's kind of the onus is on you to explain to them why you're doing it and make them understand in some kind of way that they won't go out tainting the jury talking about how dumb you are to have not made what probably was the correct decision. So she needed to do more work there.
Taryn, I do want to go back to Peter Brown's rankings here for a moment. If it turns out that the Pax brothers, when the U.S. numbers are released, if the Pax brothers have a better ranking than Derek, will you take back when you said that the Pax brothers should not be comparing themselves to Derek when there is factual information that proves that maybe they are even better than Derek?
Well, no, because then they'd still be wrong, right? They'd be comparing themselves to Derek when really they're leagues above Derek.
Derek was inferior to the Pax
Bros. Oh, yeah.
Is there any way, is it like King Solomon's baby? Could we actually determine Nick was actually a 0.68 while Phil was actually a 3.2.
I don't know if we could, but that sounds right to me. Yeah. Like, if we're looking at this like a pitcher's ERA, like Nick is getting consideration for the All-Star game and Phil is like getting bumped out of the rotation.
All right. This is a question from TNT Yoshi, who says, now that the brothers won, do you guys think that in general, two people playing as one is an advantage or a disadvantage? I mean, I kind of thought it was an advantage the whole way through. Alex, do you think that people in the house were sleeping on how big of an advantage it was?
Yes, and I think in part because the brothers didn't maximize the advantage as much as they could have due to their own discord. You know, like, granted, a lot of it's immaturity, and it's part of why they were chosen specifically. Mm-hmm. They knew that this wouldn't be something they could utilize as well as two brothers who are, like, best friends in real life. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like, if they had been able to, you know, squash all petty differences very quickly, have, like, these conversations at the beginning of every morning, you're going to work these people today, I'm going to work these people today, like, really outline a strategy for how to divide and conquer in their conversation. Like, they could have been on top of every single thing that happened in the house. There's no reason why anything should go down that they don't know about, because they're able to be pretty much omnipresent. They just, you know, again, part of why they were chosen to be cast is production knew that they weren't going to be smooth operators when it came to having to play as in tandem. They knew Phil was going to be dominant and was going to, keep Nick from really having a voice, which he really did for much of the game. And they knew that Nick was going to get agitated and was going to lash out at Phil at some point. And so that's their wrench, that kind of was a bit of a con to the pro of having each other.
Taryn, now as we head into Big Brother 18, which is about 5 or 6 weeks away here this summer. Now, like, we just have more information just to, pour into our computer, much like, Peter Brown's computer that spits out all this information. But in terms of when we're going to do a million podcasts and we're going to talk about the overall strategy of how you play Big Brother, is there anything that we could take away from how this season ultimately ended, where you have the brothers who everybody for the most part just sort of disregarded as, okay, they don't know what they're doing, they're making mistakes, they can't possibly win. And Kelsey, another person probably in that similar sort of scenario, okay, well, she's not a person who can win, but these two people end up in the end. Is there anything to try to get rid of these players earlier in the game because for whatever reason, these are players who can just linger and then win these challenges? Like, should we be changing the way we look at these games of, okay, maybe it's better to keep the threats around longer and target these players more towards the middle? Or is there no way to prevent some sort of outcome like this if you're a person in the house?
I mean, I don't think so. I think that what it really came down to is just, like, had Cass, Tim, and Joel been studying more, we would have seen a different outcome. They had the numbers going into it. They should have had the advantage. And they just kind of fumbled the ball. I think the biggest takeaway we get from this season is study. When you get down to the end, be studying, like crazy. Otherwise, what are you doing there?
Yeah,
study. And from the moment people start getting evicted, be aware of the possibility that your actions could be monitored now. I think that's another thing that you have to prepare for, because we saw that, like, if that axe comes down on you, it's very hard to maneuver out of.
But what could you possibly do to say, okay, now my actions are being monitored? How would you play the game differently?
I think you need to not be all over the place pre-jury now. I think that the good of establishing those social relationships at this point, now that Jordan has gone out, now that Mitch has gone out, where they both have, I think we almost have to say that in Big Brother Canada, the good of setting yourself up ahead of the jury phase almost outweighs the bad. The reverse.
I disagree with that, because I think that, you know, every season there's going to be 2 to 3, maybe 4 people who are doing that, who are all over the place, who are ensuring their safety in the first half of the game. So really, you just have to make sure that you're not, you know, you don't get hit by that 25% of, like, you're the one that's going to go out that way. Like we saw with Tim, like, Tim was all over the place. He got lucky. He didn't get hit by that buyback, and him and Cass were able to ride out toward the end. You know, Cass was another person that could have got hit by that. It didn't happen. So I think that it's still beneficial to ensure your safety in that way and play the game. It's just like, you just got to hope it doesn't hit you.
I still say that the move is to just play tighter in that first half of the game. I think you want to be social, but I don't think that you want to be strategic and really be trying to make anything happen in that first, like, just sort of be good with everybody and not be one of these people who's trying to organize anything, because I think that that's where you end up getting yourself into trouble. Taryn, do you disagree?
Well, it depends, right? Because that's obviously, like, that is definitely the ideal scenario where you can just kind of sit back and you don't have to interfere at all, because things are going in a way that it's okay that you're not interfering. But sometimes, you know, things happen, the wrong people win the right competitions, and all of a sudden you kind of need to step in to make sure that things don't go wildly out of your favor going into the second half of the game. So I do think that that is what you should be trying to do, but it's not always possible. And if you see things going out of your favor, you do need to kind of step in and make sure it's not happening, and then just hope that you don't get hit by one of these twists, because there's not always going to be one of these twists. So to intentionally hinder yourself on the basis that a twist might happen, you know, could be devastating to your game as much as the twist.
Mm-hmm. All right. Here's a hot button question, Alex. Miranda wants to know, agree or disagree, the best player of each Big Brother Canada season has never won Big Brother Canada.
Agree.
Taryn?
Yep, definitely.
Interesting. Interesting. I think that the one part, I think you get into trouble with BB Canada 2.
I think Neto was the better player. I think John was great. You know, yeah, to me, that's not a knock on John. That's a, you know, that's a lavishing of praise on Neto at that point.
Yeah. And John Party shows up last night to talk to the jury. I tried to tweet this out, but I kind of butchered it, what I was trying to say. That I know that Jared was the popular house guest in terms of the stud with the ladies. Was John Party going for the Jared look, Alex?
I have been seeing, well, you know, it's important to remember, I guess he's not there anymore, but he was working with the Ginger Ninja over at the Zen Zoo. And that's, you know, that's a very Kaz environment, is my understanding. So, you know, you let the hair down over there, I think, and take it easy.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, on the heels of the Joe Anglim stuff, the man bun look is very in with reality TV contestants.
Is that the move?
Yeah. And I've seen him put that up in a man bun on some pictures here on Twitter and stuff. And the ladies seem to like the man bun. I certainly wouldn't know, but hats off to the guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I like the more clean cut John Party look. What do you think, Taryn?
It does seem to be the consensus. People were a little shocked when they saw John.
I was shocked. I was blown away that I don't know. It looked like the poor man's Kessler curls.
Yeah, right. You know, you sit him right next to Jared, and it's just like, oh, you know, it's not a favorable comparison.
Yeah.
You know, Jared, he's been growing that hair out for 2 years. Yeah, he gave up $100,000 for
it. Nice
but
try, John.
John would cut it for Big Brother.
John, you might have won the game, but you'll never have hair as good as mine. It'll never happen. Keep trying, bro.
Those okay. Kessler locks.
Yeah. All right. And Monica wants to know, after hearing you talk with Jeremy about a final two versus a final three, what do you think about a final three in Big Brother Canada? Is this a solution to some of these problems where we talk about the best player not winning Big Brother Canada? Certainly, it would have let the jury sort it out between John and Netta in Big Brother Canada 2. Then again, last night, you would have had Tim in the mix. Any thought that, I mean, I feel like that one of these Big Brothers is going to do it eventually, Alex.
Yeah, I guess I still prefer a final two. I mean, I think that's the really kind of the core of the game is like, once you open it up to a final three, I think every time we've seen a final three, it ends up, it, it's some kind of a blowout anyway. Like, there's very rarely, you know, three. Like, when do we really see three viable candidates anyway?
I don't, I'm kind of on board with this.
Well, I mean, for me,
Vanessa versus Steve. You didn't want to see that?
But Steve cutting Vanessa was so great.
He made the move he had to make when he had to make it. Yeah, I mean, I think more than a final three, what I would like to see is like the final four HOH not have a veto and final three comps not being like that final competition not being so superfluous, being more like last night wasn't bad, but being, you know, like in Big Brother US, it's like, you know, does Johnny Mac, you know, did he make the statement, you know, disparaging his own dentistry clients, or did he make the statement disparaging his house guests? You know what I mean? It's like, I guess his house guests, but it turns out it wasn't. Who would have known? You know what I mean?
You made like a Johnny Mac noise there to talk about that.
Yeah, right. It's tough.
I love the variance that goes into the final three HOH. I love that it's basically a crapshoot because it really ups the level of difficulty. And people have this idea of me as somebody who doesn't like the randomness of the competitions because I harp on it so much, but I actually love it because it's just like poker where like you can play your best game and still, you know, get unlucky and lose. And that's part of what makes the game so difficult. But the thing that's different between that and Twists is that you can prepare for it. It's something that happens a lot in every single game. And I like that the final two opens up the game, opens up the ability for the players to be able to do something a little more extraordinary than we might otherwise see. And so like seeing somebody like Derek convince Cody to take him to the end, I love that. That's fantastic. You know, seeing these moments where John cuts Netta, I don't want to lose those things because I think it really elevates the gameplay.
Yeah. Also, I do want to echo what you guys were saying last night on the Big Brother Canada reunion show or the 2-hour finale. It does feel a little bit fat, that 2 hours. Yeah, I think even the Big Brother US final show is only 90 minutes. And I do feel like we do a lot of highlight packages. I do feel like you have all those people there. I think you could be making better use of talking with some of these people that we've seen all season and then people that got to watch the show. I also agree that after we get the vote, it'd be great to hear from some of those people in terms of why did you vote this way? Why did you vote this way? And sort of get more of a reaction from the winner after the fact. So that I think that would be a better use of that time as opposed to all of these highlight reels.
Yeah, especially with a night like last night where it seemed like most of the jury had made the decision they were going to vote for Tim. And then when you see Tim walk out, there is a lot of visible reaction. Joel is like, I mean, this is very violent reaction, you know, so, you know, when Mitch said his vote was live, like you do have to believe some of these people's votes were live because they were going to vote for Tim. And so, you know, while they had considered the possibility Tim isn't there, they were banking on the hope that he was. So that did create a bit of like some people, maybe they didn't make up their minds completely on the spot, but certainly like that changed how much time they really put into thinking about the actual final two.
Okay. As we start to sort of wrap this up and then start to look ahead to Big Brother 18, Taryn, if there's one thing that you feel like Big Brother 18 could take away from Big Brother Canada 4, what would that thing be to you?
I don't know if it's necessarily just like isolated to Big Brother Canada 4, but the thing that I want the most is the old jury questioning. I want the longer jury questions. I want that back. I think both game-wise and entertainment-wise, it's a no-brainer. I really, really want that back.
Mm-hmm. Alex, anything for you from Big Brother Canada 4?
In terms of takeaways or what I would change?
Anything that you would say that Big Brother Canada 4 did so well, Big Brother US needs to tap into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I prefer the final three competition that actually has some, you know, like answers that you can, you know, have some, like if you establish good social relationships with these people, I like that can come back and help you with some of the answers. I don't like when the answers have tons of variance. And I think, you know, ultimately just the production, the state of the house, the quality of the house, the, you know, just like there's a lot that goes into the Big Brother Canada product. And it seems like they have much less of a budget, but it does seem like there's a bit more care put into certain elements of the production value that I wish we saw more of in the U.S. house that has been, let's be honest, the same house since season 7. Like, it would be cool to see them, you know, upgrade at some point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them experiment more with international house guests. I think that was a fantastic idea that played out really well, and I'd love to see the U.S. version try that.
Yeah. not just people from that have been all around the world, like on The Amazing Race? That wasn't an international twist for you enough, Jeff and Jackie?
It wasn't quite international enough.
Yeah.
Did you really go all around the world if you were out in episode 3?
Oh, come on. Now you're just throwing shade. They weren't out in episode 3. I mean, they were out, I mean, maybe week 3 of Big Brother, but not episode 3 of The Amazing Race. Let me ask you this question from the great BB President on Twitter. How do you feel like casting has evolved in Big Brother Canada? And can we extrapolate why they where they would lean for Big Brother Canada 5? More recruits or superfans? I feel like that Big Brother Canada 3 was the season of superfans. Big Brother Canada 4 seemed like it was more of the season of recruits. And I do feel like that you had a, I felt like a little more excitement this season. But would you say that that was more because of the format of the show? Because to go back to the conversations you guys were having last night, Taryn?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, at least for us, and this isn't necessarily the consensus, but certainly for me and Alex, And Brent as well. Like we loved the Big Brother Canada 3 cast. We think that it could have been a great season. But the twists kind of messed with the game a lot, and we kind of got a mangled product. And this season we had less of the twists, and a slightly lower quality cast. I think that with just a little bit more game players in there, we could have seen something a little more exciting, especially throughout the entirety of the season. And I think losing Mitch was a huge blow. So. I would like them to go back to the Big Brother Canada 3 formula and let them kind of play out the game and see how that goes.
Okay. And I think, you know, there's a reason Hamster Watch's name is Hamster Watch. You know what I mean? Like this is what this atmosphere is. And when you introduce a twist week 3 and then follow it with a twist week 4 and a twist or starting in week 2, sorry, and do a twist every week, it's akin to like, you know, you have gerbils in a cage and you want to see an experiment. But you pick up the cage and shake it violently every day. They're just going to go to the corners and cower and be scared and not make any moves because you're freaking them out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's to me what Big Brother Canada 3 was.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been so much fun. I really did enjoy the season. I know that, you know, some people are really unhappy with how it all played out, but I had a lot of fun covering this season with you guys. And, you know, every week I really look forward to coming on and talking about the show with you guys and Brent and, you know, whatever guests we had. So just from me to you guys and you guys who are watching, I really did have a very fun time. And thank you guys so much for all your hard work.
Yeah. Thank you for having us on, because like, I agree. Like this was despite the season, I thought it was so much fun to cover. You know, hanging out with all the people who are in the chat, who watch, who comment along and tell us, like, you know, we're not necessarily enthused with the season, but we love watching the coverage because that's so much fun. Like that makes it so much more fun. You know, getting to talk about it, getting to complain about it when we want to complain, and it's just been a blast.
And on top of it, you know, I think that we probably forget that we didn't have any Battle of the Block to be talking about and things like that. So I do feel like that this turned out to be much more unpredictable than what we were used to seeing in the Big Brother versions. And it may be just like maybe everybody could just be lighting a candle each night for the next 6 weeks or so to pray for no Battle of the Block coming up here in Big Brother 18.
Yeah, let's hope Julie Chen is very busy for the next several weeks and she's not able to get out on the street to talk to these fans who allegedly...
fan favorite is back. Battle of the Block.
They better be talking about... No.
And also...
It's just not.
The fan favorite format of mixing returning players with new players. I'm sure that's in the mix too, so...
If we learned anything... Survivor camera moment.
Wait, hold on!
Speaking of which, though, Rob, you did notice that like that jackpot never really paid off this season, right? That was our takeover of BB Canada.
That was going to be something. That was good. All right. Well, you know, did we miss it? Did we mix it?
No, I'm glad it never came to anything.
It's just one of those things. You're like, why was that there? Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you guys so much. Very, very fun. And we will be having more coverage in terms of Big Brother Canada 4 between this show and between what Jordan is doing on the happy hour. Jordan has a week of finals coming up in school, and I am going to be pretty busy with the Survivor finale. It's my own finals week next week as well, so I don't know if we're going to get into anything. I know they're going to go to Niagara Falls and probably be out of the loop for a little bit anyway, but probably getting into the week after and into June, I think we'll probably be able to touch base with more of the Big Brother Canada 4 cast. So look out for that. Of course, follow Jordan on Twitter as well, that he'll have updates of what he's doing at Jordan Parhar. Of course, I'm at Rob Cesternino, and these guys are at Alex Kidwell and at Armstrong Taryn. We've got a lot more coming up tonight with the Amazing Race finale. We will have that live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time. And then I will have exit interviews with the Amazing Race Final 3 coming up on Monday on the podcast. I have on my Big Brother Canada Final 3 interviews. That's currently up on the website. And if you didn't catch it during the week, I really did enjoy my interview with Arissa. I thought that she was lovely to talk to. And I really, I really do appreciate that. Not only did she take the time to be on the show, she stayed on for a lot longer than she was scheduled to appear with me. And so I do think that that speaks to how much she cares about the show and the job that she has. And, nobody's telling her she has to go do, interviews and try to reach out to the fans and do the stuff that she does on social media. So I think that Big Brother Canada is very lucky to have Arissa as a host and somebody who really does care about, what the product is that's going out, as opposed to, somebody who's like punching out when the camera goes off.
Who could we be talking about, Rob?
I don't know. Look, that's a different story. But no, I really did appreciate that she did that. And really a great job by her this season as well. So thanks to you guys. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who was behind the scenes on all of these shows that we did on Fridays, and plenty more coming up. We've got our Survivor coverage going to be wrapping up as well. We had Jeremy Collins, Bryce Isaiah on the podcast this week. We'll have our live know-it-alls after the finale this Wednesday. We'll talk to all the Survivor finalists and then take your feedback after the show. Plus, we'll have the Wiggle Room and why the latest player lost, all here on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Go to robinswebsite.com/iTunes or search for RJP in your favorite podcatcher. Take care. Have a good one, everybody.